opened the Senate Revenue Committee on the last day of March. The batting order that we'll have today is Senate Bill 626 first. Then we'll do House Bill 2312 and 2135. And only have a work session on 2312. We'll probably come back to House Bill 2135. With that, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 626. Mazin, what does this bill do?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 626 creates a revenue sharing task force that will study revenue sharing by jurisdictions within the that share the same urban growth boundaries. It's effective on passage, sunsets on January 2nd, 2006. And I think the issue that this bill would address is a study of whether the current law, which basically if there is new development, will include that new development in the existing way of dividing the revenue, especially the property taxes, and others if there is. And look into a way of sequestering some of these new revenues into a fund, and then finding an optimal way or a way to divide and between the revenue between different jurisdictions. It allows the Speaker of the House and the Senate President to appoint the members of this task force out of legislators, local governments, academicians, and revenue experts. However, it emphasizes that it's all on a voluntary basis and encourages the use of or utilization of the legislative staff. And as we see it at this point, no revenue impact. However, the fiscal, I don't suspect there would be a fiscal, but I wasn't able to establish that yet from the revenue office.
Thank you. Councillor Hostica? And whoever you would like to bring up with you to help you present.
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members. For the record, my name is Carl Hostica. I'm a member of the Metro Council, and this bill was introduced at the request of Metro, and so we obviously support it, and I'm speaking in favor of the bill. With me is Reed Wagner, a graduate student at the University of Oregon who has done research on revenue sharing in other jurisdictions and would be available to answer technical questions or questions about the experience of other places. I thought that in my testimony I'd like to describe what I see as the problem that gave rise to the proposal, and then I deal with the question of why would you want to have a legislative task force studying this issue at this point? What's the reasoning behind this particular way of approaching the problem? The problem, as I see it, and as has been faced in a number of other areas around the country, is something that is a multisyllabic word called the fiscalization of land use. And we can then say this is the defiscalization bill. So if you want to have a big idea with big words, that's basically what it's all about. The problem is that while jurisdictions in, under the Oregon land use law, when we allocate land either within urban growth boundaries, without urban growth boundaries, and within urban growth boundaries when we allocate land for certain purposes, that has fiscal implications for local governments. As you know, under the way that our property tax system is structured now, the only way that a local government can increase the revenues is to increase the base, the property base, and the value base of their property, and rezoning or bringing in new land is a major way that they can increase that base. So that when we look at the issues from a metropolitan perspective of allocating land, we get into this fiscalization issue where the jurisdictions enter into political and sometimes other types of competition in order to capture certain kinds of land into their boundaries. That leads then, that competition leads to potentially a number of distortions, and probably the most widely pointed to distortion is the situation in Hillsborough and Cornelius, where you have two jurisdictions side by side, one jurisdiction with a high amount of high-valued industrial land, which we keep adding to that jurisdiction, gaining a large amount of revenue from that land, and the other jurisdiction right next door to it, having some of the people who work in those industries live in their jurisdiction and create fiscal demands upon their local government. So you have this situation where you create imbalances through land use, and because of the way our system is structured, people look to the land use system as a way to try to solve local fiscal problems. That's basically, from my viewpoint, the reason why you would want to move ahead, is because you have these kind of issues develop and these kind of imbalances develop. Other areas of the country have then looked to revenue sharing as a way to address those problems. Probably the biggest example is the Twin Cities area in Minneapolis, St. Paul, in Minnesota, where the legislature there almost 30 years ago set up a system of revenue sharing between jurisdictions, and the thing that gave rise to that was the Mall of the Americas. And there was a great deal of competition about where that mall would locate, and a great deal of concern about the effect of that mall on the overall land use patterns and fiscal health of the jurisdictions of the region. So they came up with a system of sharing the benefits of land use decisions regardless of where they happen to land in any particular local jurisdiction. The proposal before you doesn't answer any questions. It actually raises questions. And so that the main question would be, why would we want the legislature to establish a task force to study this? My experience as a former member of this body, not the Senate but of the House, was that you can either do it two ways. One way is for a group of people to come together and think that they've got a solution, to work it all out, polish it, buff it, and throw it into the legislative hopper. And as you know, when you do that, then all of a sudden all the problems that you never thought of surface, and you have to go back and rethink your whole proposal, get all the interested parties together, and work out a solution. I think it's much more productive if from the start we recognize that we don't have all the answers, that we have mostly questions, and that we want to get the parties together to create a proposal. I think that you get a much more useful result from that rather than setting up an adversarial situation where you expect somebody to come forward with a solution and then have the usual political problems of chewing up that solution. All of this would require probably in the end some form of legislation to bring it about. So it could be theoretically done, and you may hear people talk about how theoretically you could do it through local government having their intergovernmental agreements to share revenue. I tell you, from my experience at Metro, where we have 24 cities, 3 counties, and innumerable local special districts, that such a prospect is not very attractive. It's not very likely that you're going to get intergovernmental agreements negotiated between all those parties, as we saw recently with the attempt to regionalize the water supply system. That failed because of innumerable details and problems. So basically the structure of the situation from my viewpoint is the legislature would have to act in order to create such a system, and so that it would be more efficient to have the legislature sponsor the study. On the second page of my testimony, there's a number of the questions which I think a task force would consider, and it starts with really defining the problem a lot more precisely than I've defined the problem, to look at the experience around the country, to define what revenues would be shared and how much revenues would be shared, what kind of changes in land use would trigger revenue going into a pool, and then how you would distribute it out of the pool, and then the effects of such a thing. So that's basically the proposal, in as much condensed form as I can make it, and the reasons, I'd be happy to answer questions. If there are questions of experience or detail, I'd like to call on Mr. Wagner, and if there are people who raise questions that I didn't anticipate, I might like the opportunity to address those at some later point.
Questions for Councilor Hostica? One question that I had, and we've talked about this a little bit, is what exact problem would this task force be addressing?
Well, as I said, it's both the imbalances that are created by land use decisions is primarily the thing, and then whether or not land use is the proper mechanism to address those imbalances, or whether some sort of sharing process could better address those problems. And as you'll hear some other testimony from people who are working at the local level, they may be able to define it better. But we have situations, as I said, Hillsborough, Cornelius, Sherwood, Tualatin. You have a situation that Mr. Hartsock will talk about in those areas that we newly brought in on the eastern side of the metropolitan region, where you may have jurisdictions trying to cherry-pick pieces of land into their jurisdiction, leaving a residue which is a non-viable government. This would be in the Damascus area. So that the problem is that the way our tax system is structured, it creates incentives for local governments to behave in ways that don't make sense either for their citizens or for the region, but may make sense for their revenues or their treasury, their bank accounts, basically. But in terms of service provision or what's an efficient use of land, it doesn't make sense. And revenue sharing is a way to address that.
And you believe that the state, since we're somewhat of a neutral party in this, should be the convener of this task force?
Well, I think the state would be the best convener, because ultimately, if there were a proposal, it would come back to your lap. You would have to enact it, because it deals with those aspects of the taxation system which are controlled by the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Did you have testimony or?
Just in regards to the state's role in Minnesota.
We need to get your name.
Oh, Reed Wagner. Sorry, Reed Wagner. I'm a graduate student working research at Carl Hostica. And in Minnesota, it was adopted by the state as in regards to legislation as a party that could oversee what otherwise would be intergovernmental decisions that would be too difficult. There have been voluntary revenue sharing in different parts of the country that have not been adopted by the state. But in both Minnesota and New Jersey, in regards to regional revenue sharing, it has been overseen by the legislature. So.
Okay,
thank you. We might call on you at the end to answer any questions. Mayor Hammerstadt of Lake Oswego. And John Karstock, can you join the mayor here?
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Chair Deckert, members of the committee. I'm Judy Hammerstadt, and I'm mayor of Lake Oswego. And I'm speaking on my own behalf rather than behalf of the council. This is not a bill that was within our legislative package, and I have quite a bit of history with this issue, and will certainly be taking it to the council if you see fit to pass the bill and have the task force employed. I became familiar with this probably 15 years ago with the Minnesota model, and it wasn't applicable at the time in Oregon. This was pre-Measure 5, where we were tax base funded, so that as your value went up, your tax rates went down. So there was really no way that we were going to be able to do the kind of revenue sharing that was done in the state of Minnesota at that time. But it has, with the movement of the urban growth boundary, become more interesting. One of the things that's happening is that as jurisdictions have land added to their urban growth boundaries, and they're looking at zoning those lands for certain needs within the region, there is a reluctance for jurisdictions to accept industrial land, which has less value as far as garnering taxes than does commercial retail base. So everybody is wanting in their mix to have commercial retail, and they are really sort of stepping back from wanting to have industrial, mainly warehousing, which is one of the things that we really need in the metropolitan area. So if you look at taking away the financial incentive for what that land use would be, and only on new development doing the sharing of what the consequences would be, then it gives more incentive for us all to take our share of whatever those land uses are that you have actually have an identified need for in the metropolitan area. I know that this bill says it would apply to jurisdictions that share an urban growth boundary. I did speak with people at the League of Oregon Cities this morning, and they would rather have that change to being the metropolitan area only, and I would see no problem with that. I think it makes it a little bit cleaner. One of the things that raises its head in something like this is you say your revenue sharing. Well, that means that somebody has it and somebody doesn't, and you're going to take it from somebody who does and give it to somebody who doesn't. Well, then you have winners and losers. So obviously the winners are going to be reluctant to join in, and the losers are the ones who are going to probably want to be able to share somebody else's wealth. I have no idea where Lake Oswego would fit into this, and frankly, I don't care. It seems to me that it's something that would be of benefit in being able to make good decisions within the region. And one of the reasons for the task force is I have always been curious as to how it would work. And we need more information. Yes, we could do that, as Carl said, at the local level, but it doesn't carry the kind of credibility that it would if it were done at the legislative level as a task force. And I've sat on a number of legislative task forces which do then generate a lot of discussion about other possibilities. Is this the only way that we can reach the solution? It may not be. There may be other things that come up in the course of a task force. But I think we really need the vehicle to be able to know what those answers are. So I would urge the passage of Senate Bill 626 so that we could actually have some kind of a credible forum in order to be able to make these decisions. And I want to mention just one thing about not being able to gain credibility or go forward when it's not a legislative task force or committee. And actually, this was done by the legislature, but you may remember Senate Bill 122, which was passed about three or four sessions ago, which required the service districts, cities, and counties to get together in order to be able to identify urban service providers and to make intergovernmental agreements. And I was struck when Councillor Hostica mentioned these intergovernmental agreements because it never worked. You couldn't get there. People would not agree. And it was, once again, a fear of winners and losers. And it seems to me that we ought to be able to do a better job than that. We ought to be able to get away from that really provincial attitude that if somebody else is going to gain, and we're all living in that same region, that it's bad for us to lose. I think everybody gains if everybody does better.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Chair Deckert, members of the Commission. My name is John Hartsock. I'm the vice chair of the Committee for the Future of Damascus. The committee was formed in December of 2001 to research the options to the citizens of the area for governance once the potential expansion of the UGB occurs. And since that time, we've been meeting weekly to really deal over and look at what are the options. Of course, now that the expansion has been made, it's about 11,000 acres. 1,700 of that's going to be employment land. They're anticipating 23,000 housing units for a population of about 60,000. So that's going to become a fairly sizable city within the state. Today, the population is 5,000 with about 2,500 housing units. So it's a large build of infrastructure to make this happen. Clackamas County has been compiling a plan for the infrastructure improvements: roads, water, sewer, surface water, parks, fire, law enforcement, libraries, schools. First blush over the 20 years to come to build out is about $1.4 billion at today's dollars. $1.9 billion if you look at time of construction, that when you'd actually be spending the money. Conceptual plan also looked at current sources for funding these type of improvements. SDCs certainly were looked at, but they'd have to be increased dramatically from today's level. urban renewal, which of course isn't very popular with the existing cities, the new city that could possibly be formed, the service districts, their ability to then provide service to this new area if you were using urban renewal, local improvement districts, state highway funding, etc. The days of the federal grants of building out these types of infrastructure, of course, are long gone. Assuming that all of these sources, SDCs and what have you, were at the appropriate levels, we still have a shortfall of almost $300 million in cash just to be able to bankroll the improvement. And if we borrowed that money, of course, it just puts it in that much worse a condition. So there's a real need for some type of ability to assist in getting this large area, predominantly residential, built to serve the region. As a part of a governance study that the county, City of Happy Valley, City of Gresham, the Boring Fire District, Clackamas Fire District, Sunrise Water Authority, the CPOs, and our group is participating in, PSU's Institute of Metropolitan Studies has been facilitating that. We are in that group. We're working on a memorandum of understanding, kind of the start of an intergovernmental agreement, to share the tax base coming from industrial lands. We've had that discussion. It's of interest. Smaller area, fewer parties. It's possible to get that together. Obviously, a long ways to go from where we are today. If we're going to shift to development paying for itself, which is, of course, the desired approach and what we hear from the public on a regular basis, then we're going to have to be creative. I think Senate Bill 626 is a start to the process to bring new and different approaches. One of the examples, in a 10-minute brain session, brainstorming session, is what if we obtained either statewide or region-wide voter approval of a $300 million bond to fund that shortfall. That within 10 years would be have a cash excess in the income coming in. That then goes to the next community for its development. So that's another approach of a type of revenue sharing to allow these developments to move forward and pay for themselves. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this and for a new approach to an ever-pressing need to how do we fund this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Well, thank you for coming. And I just want to emphasize to everybody on this committee, this underlines how desperately we need system development charges. Mm-hmm. When we've had discussion in this committee about allowing local governments, local option funding, so that communities can take care of themselves, and it just galls me that it's against state law right now. Mm-hmm. For communities like Beaverton Hillsboro to decide how they want to build their own schools. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate your coming here, and it's going to be a huge problem on where this money comes from.
Thank you. Further? Thank you, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary Conkling, Ms. Ludwig, and Mr. Cottle. Whatever order you choose.
Well, since I'm on cue with Senator Ringo, I'll go first. I'm Gary Conkling, appearing here today on behalf of the Beaverton and Hillsboro school districts, which are not incidentally taking a position on this bill, but I do want to raise a concern or two that are at least in the vein of Senator Ringo's comments. As most of you are aware, because you've heard me talk about the struggles that high growth school districts have encountered because of the student enrollment growth that has continued and is in large part generated by land use decisions that have created infill and higher density development and that type of thing. We have been looking for tools to help us finance construction of new schools and the addition to existing schools. As Senator Ringo noted, we, by state law, are prevented from using any direct tools such as a system development charge or a school impact fee. We, on behalf of these two school districts, have introduced school impact fee legislation. I think this is our sixth session in a row, and we still think it's a good idea. One of the other ideas that we've proposed that Senator Ringo and Senator Starr were kind enough to introduce for us deals with a growth increment. And as a previous speaker noted, following Measure 50, when we move to a rate-based system of taxes, we have created this idea of a growth increment. In our particular approach, what we have talked about is being able to capture the growth increment within a school district, and again, just the part that is taxes that are generated by the K-12 school levy, and to be able to use those dollars for capital improvements in our district before they ultimately are added to local revenues and put through the school formula, the state school fund distribution formula. As written, now to the point about Senate Bill 626, this task force would appear, based on my reading of its charge, to look at a metropolitan-wide growth increment strategy to collect money. It isn't specific as to whether or not it would just be money from the general government side of the ledger or would be really all taxes, property taxes, that is to say including school-related funds. And in that regard, if it was, it would be similar in its impact to urban renewal, or at least how urban renewal formerly worked. So my concern is that in looking at this task force, if in fact we're going to have it formed, I would hopefully, or I would urge you to hopefully look at maybe narrowing its charge so that with respect to the growth increment, that it doesn't impact schools in any negative way. That is to say that it wouldn't look at taking part of the school funds that now go into the distribution formula, or that maybe you even include that it looks at ways to help finance schools, which are part of infrastructure not only in newly developing areas but in all parts of our metropolitan region, for that matter, all parts of the state. So I think that some precising language, maybe either through exception or additional language, would be useful if in fact you're going to pursue this idea.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Linda Ludwig speaking for the League of Oregon Cities today. As the language of Senate Bill 626 sits, we have some large problems with the bill. The broadness of the bill and the lack of definitions of the term jurisdictions, the types of revenue, as well as even what the term new development means. You've heard from a prior witness that we have huge concerns that although the bill seems to be chiefly targeted to the metro area, it does have some substantial impacts to cities and counties outside the metro boundary. And if I were going to prioritize my concerns with the bill, it would be chiefly that. If this is supposed to be a metro bill, let's specifically say that. Other concerns, apparently the proponents of the bill haven't spoken with the cities in the metro boundary about this bill, because this morning I did contact quite a few of them and do have some quick responses from letters from them, which are very interesting. There is some support and there are a lot of concerns, and I'd like to read just a couple of lines. From the city of Beaverton, I oppose this bill because it is too broad in nature, and at a time of reduced funding, sharing revenue could threaten providing basic city services. While the intellectual discussion would be interesting, there is concern that the very basic services could be jeopardized. Beaverton and Washington County are high-growth areas and have had enough difficulty providing basic infrastructure and services. Sharing a limited funding pool, while noble, could severely impact the exporting jurisdiction. And there's a very interesting comment here as well.
Who is the author of that?
Mayor Drake from the city of Beaverton. If you like, I can provide you with copies of the letters.
Probably sitting somewhere up here, but
The city of Gresham from Mayor Charles Becker notes that growth has not occurred equally throughout the region. Creating a regional revenue sharing plan which only considers new development is probably not an equitable plan as well. And he notes that if revenue sharing is to be considered, only those jurisdictions directly affected should be involved in those decisions. So I would pass on concerns with some of the cities. There is some definitely some support through some of our jurisdictions with this bill. Ask that if the bill were to be moved forward, that it would be targeted only to the metro boundary.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Mark Cottle. I'm the mayor of Sherwood, Oregon. My city's had the designation for, I think, the last 10 years of being the fastest-growing city in Oregon. We've increased in population from about 2,000 people in about the year 2000 or 1990 to about 14,500 to today. We're growing at about 1,000 people a year. Housing starts are up in our city or equal to what it was last year and the year before, even with the recession as it currently is. I've talked to a lot of the mayors that surround our jurisdiction, and although there is some serious concerns about the possible outcome of it, and they sort of nominated me to come down informally and talk to you folks about this, is I do have cautious support for the Senate bill, and I think that getting information would be very helpful, and the approach that Washington County has been trying to take is a sub-regional analysis, and most of our dealings with Metro now, even on the urban growth boundaries, supporting Goal 5, the land which should be set aside for habitat for fish, wildlife, and so forth. We're doing it on a sub-regional analysis, and we'd like to focus that in this regard in the study. And the reason is quite simple. I'll put it on the record. Washington County has a huge sucking sound out of it, and that is money just continues to flow out. On schools, for example, I am the lowest funded school in this state. Money is just about 45 cents for every dollar that a citizen of Sherwood pays leaves my city for schools, and that's a big concern. However, on the flip side, my city is essentially becoming a bedroom town, not of Portland, but of Wilsonville and Hillsborough. And for every tax dollar I get for a house, I'm spending somewhere in the neighborhood, and Carl's expert can probably correct me on this, somewhere in the neighborhood between 75 cents and 95 cents in soft services for that. Whereas if you put in a huge commercial establishment or warehouse or so forth, they're spending somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 35 cents in soft services for that, so they get a huge windfall. And so what's happening is my police force continues to have to go up. I need new library services. I'm $70 million in unfunded school liabilities for additional schools I need the next 3 to 5 years. All the while my tax base isn't growing for several reasons in the traditional sense is I'm not an employment center. I shouldn't be, and when I say I mean the city, it shouldn't be an employment center because we have a huge problem with traffic just getting things out to I-5. But under the current funding strategy that Oregon has imposed upon the area, I have a huge vested interest to try to attract as much land that I can zone commercial as possible, impounding and complicating the traffic problem. But to save the city's soft services, I need that tax base. And so on a sub-regional basis, I believe that since I am a suburb essentially of Hillsborough and Beaverton and Tigard and Wilsonville, there should be some sort of funding strategy where some of the offsets that I'm having to bear for soft services should be shared in that sub-region, if you will, because that's the normal flow of the people. And so with that, we strongly support approval of this bill, understanding that our support is limited to a sub-regional analysis of how we could share funds within a sub-region versus essentially having a megacity of the metro and sort of throwing funds out everywhere. So we support it in that regards, and I promised the other mayors when I spoke in favor of this that I would say that we support it in the regards of a sub-regional analysis of looking at how to share on that basis. Thank you.
Mayor, so by sub-regional, do you mean, and I take it you're speaking for most of the Washington County mayors?
Yes. It's mainly the East Washington County mayors. When we meet quite often together, and their only guarded support would be they'd be interested in looking at it only on a sub-regional basis, meaning inside of a county or a service area. For example, although a lot of my people flow out of my town to Wilsonville, that's actually in Clackamas County. But you can define service areas where my people are flowing out to. And, for example, Cornelius is providing huge amounts of housing services for Hillsboro. Not for any other place, but mainly for Hillsboro. And so that's how we would like to break this down. And I'm sure Clackamas County also has that same dynamic going on in Portland also. That's how we would approach this.
Great. Questions? Thank you, Mayor. Thank you. Dennis Mulvihill.
Good afternoon. Dennis Mulvihill, Washington County. Washington County Board of Commissioners does not support this bill at all. And I'll take you through the reasons, but it's mostly not a matter that there aren't problems. It's a process issue and a methods issue, I suppose. If you start with what is the problem that this is trying to be a solution for? Well, there's no agreement on that. I think what was articulated was probably pretty close, but there's some other things that probably need to be added to it. What are the range of solutions that could be looked at to solve the problem once it gets agreed upon? What is the best solution? Does the solution require legislation? Is there support from the region, the affected interests, on both the problem and the solution? We submit that this legislation, the way it's written, is fails in all those counts. The region could end up pursuing a revenue sharing solution, but you need to go through that process to get there to find out if that's actually the best thing that ought to be done. However, Washington County Board of Commissioners is a long way from that. Although they're happy to discuss all of those factors I described before. And in fact, Chairman Tom Bryan, who's out of state right now, is going to be meeting with Councillor Hostica later on this week. So we can go from there. Now, let me also end with Judy Hammerstad mentioned that the Senate Bill 122 process hasn't worked. Washington County has reached agreement with all its jurisdictions, so it's worked in Washington County. Now, it took us a long time to get there, but we did get there. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Trump?
Senator Ringo.
Well, being from Washington County, I hate to... I guess contradict folks from my own region or thing, but I'm just wondering. It's a task force, Dennis. I mean, all we're doing is going to get the proposal to get together and meet and talk, and I don't see how that can be a bad idea.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, I think the issue is that the solution has already been chosen,
okay,
and that's the problem. And if it would be backed away and go through that list of questions and get people to buy into it, then we can get there. But it seems that there is, and I think you heard it from people that preceded me, is that they're coming from a lot of different angles. And I think that Councillor Hostica has put a finger on what is a serious problem, but the root of it may or may not be what he's identified. So that's where we're coming from on it. We know that there are issues of that the land use system causes, but for instance, if you wanted to look at and I'm stretching here, and this isn't my board hasn't sent me down here with this, but one of the things that the Washington County board has talked about multiple times is how much do we send to Salem and how much do we get back, and if we are to continue to be the engine, then it would make sense that the state would want to put a little oil in it. And maybe that's one of the solutions you'd want to look at. So we're cutting ourselves short on looking at something that's maybe a little more aggressive, but it given the size of the problem, you know, maybe that's what needs to be done. So we wouldn't want to cut ourselves short there.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringo.
You mentioned that there was no real agreement on what the problem is, that this isn't how to do travel. Although, I mean, given the testimony earlier on the huge development costs for the Damascus area, I mean, is that high on the list of potential problems? Is that really what this is about?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, undoubtedly that is a part of what the problem is, that in order to get people to agree to solutions when it means that they're going to be difficult to embrace, you need to get everybody to agree to that first before you go to the next step, and that's where we're high-centered.
Okay. Thank you.
Further, Dennis, I guess the one thing that the mayor from Sherwood pointed out that I thought was at least the most enticing about this is to get better coordination. Maybe it's sub-regional. I certainly wouldn't prescribe, but do you see any value in that, just from your vantage point at the county, having some forum or task force, and if the state needs to create it, so be it, that would help coordinate that?
Mr. Chairman, my Board of Commissioners hasn't got that far yet. That's what's a little awkward about this is because you've got something that's glaring as far as that we've got some inequities, but there's no agreement where you've got people holding hands to say, okay, we're going to go get it. And this sort of a problem begs for a lot of people holding hands to make it work. So I think it's more of a process issue and methods. And, you know, the region works well together, and it has, and we enjoy doing a lot of things, and we're very successful at extracting money out of the federal government and at managing land use and growth management. So we'll get there. It's just, you know, that we're like a family, and it just takes a while to get all the siblings to, you know, get in the same room together.
Yeah. Thank you. Counselor, do you want to back clean up and answer any questions or say one, two final things?
Back clean up, Mr. Chair?
I'm preparing us.
Baseball park's going in Washington County now?
I guess. We'll share the revenues from the baseball park. Maybe we could start there. I think that, most of the testimony was in the form of posing questions, you know, and continual discussion of questions. And I sort of say in response to Mr. Mulvihill's testimony that this task force is a place where people could learn to hold hands. You know, that, as I said earlier, the question is where do you start? I think that a legislative-sponsored thing would be a good place to start. I did want to address the question of the giant sucking sound coming out of Washington County. I think that that's been the experience, and people, I think, who have experienced that rightly fear that this task force would magnify that. I don't think that we can make that assumption at the start, because I think that depending on how you defined new development or an increment generated by new development, the Washington County as an entire entity may or may not be a winner or a loser. But that Mayor Cottle, who talked about a sub-regional study, probably is getting closer to the kind of issues that I think we're talking about, that Damascus is part of the region. There's the Wilsonville, Sherwood, Tualatin area, the Hillsborough, Forest Grove, Cornelius area, that maybe a sub-regional way would be the place to go about, or a place to start with that. And then the last thing I would say is that I think that many of the mayors have been involved in discussion on this. I've personally discussed this with Mayor Drake and Mayor Becker, who were quoted here earlier, but in addition, I could go down the list, but at least 10 different mayors have discussed this with me, and I think that there's that the impression that people haven't heard of the idea is really a misimpression. It's maybe that they hadn't heard that there was a bill being heard in the Senate Revenue Committee on March 31st, maybe something that could have been a surprise, because even we didn't know that it was scheduled until the middle of last week. But the idea has been around, and I think that it should, that with your blessing, it would raise it to a higher level of discussion, and that we could have the possibility of actually seeing something enacted and implemented within our lifetimes.
Thank you.
Carl, if you can meet with some of the mayors that sent testimony to us.
And I appreciate it if you could share those letters, if that's okay with the chair, so I can see which ones have expressed what kinds of ideas. You've heard from a few today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that if we generated all the 24 mayors, we'd hear a lot more support. We may hear some more opposition, too. So.
Yeah, that would be helpful for us as we move forward. And some of the amendments sound, I think, you'd be amenable to.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
There's one more. Close. Anyone else on Senate Bill?
Thank you.
626. A letter from Wilsonville is going out to the committee. They were unable to make it. Close public hearing on Senate Bill 626 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2312.
Thanks, Jake.
Thank you, Madison. Good work. Seems like a straightforward bill, Mr. Yates. What is it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dick Yates with Legislative Revenue. I think what is being done here really is to just make the ORS look better. In general, you like to have, when you define something in the ORS, you like to know what it applies to. And in general, it doesn't apply to all of the ORS. And what this does is, last session, or actually in 99, we enacted the qualifying statute with respect to the master settlement agreements. And there are some definitions in there, and the terms defined are also defined elsewhere in ORS. And what this does, and defined differently in some cases. And what this does is to simply put in a phrase there that says that the definitions that are defined in that qualifying statute apply to the sections which essentially contain the qualifying statute. And that's all it does.
Do we have anyone here that wants to testify on this bill?
Come on, Phyllis.
Well,
it's
not even on our list.
Wondering why it's on our list.
Senator Ringo, did you have
No, I don't want to touch this one, Mr. Chair.
Committee, yep, okay. Close.
Is this an Uncle Louie bill? We need to know if it's an Uncle Louie bill or not.
Senator Hannon, are we dealing with an Uncle Louie bill?
I don't know. I'm not going to touch this one.
Well, who is going to carry this one?
Put it on the consent calendar.
We will.
Exactly. Who's not here? Senator Farioli will carry.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 2312. Open a work session on House Bill 2312.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2312 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2312 to the floor with the due pass recommendation for the consent agenda. Any discussion?
I was going to object only so I wouldn't have to carry it.
Just ask for now.
Two of us.
The last person in mind. Any objection? So ordered. Senator Corcoran, thank you. Appreciate that. And we did not open a public hearing on House Bill 2315. Mr. Yates, and I don't believe we've scheduled this for a work session, so this is just our hearing.
We have heard the bill before and discussed it, and you actually decided to have an amendment made to the bill, and we should have scheduled it for a work session today and mistakenly scheduled it for hearing. So I think Paul has rescheduled it for Thursday.
Hard to get good help.
So
if you remember the discussion, do you want to just frame the amendment, if you like?
Do it quickly on Thursday, sure.
The discussion around the bill is the question of making it clear what is in the general fund and what is separate from the general fund. And secondly, making clear what happens when the general fund is exhausted.
Oh, this is yours.
Yes.
Victoria.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part of the bill would allow the treasurer, essentially, with consent of a majority of the treasurer, the secretary of state, and the governor, to register warrants, essentially, as not paid for want of funds, and that those then become a debt and negotiable, and basically it makes a organized structure within which the state can continue to operate. Concern was that it, by the committee, was raised that the Secretary of State, the Governor, and the Treasurer essentially ought to step forward and sort of take responsibility for recognizing the situation that we're in. And on page 4, line 19, the amendment would delete the term there, a majority of the Governor, and thereby require that all three direct the Treasurer to do so.
Senator Starr, did you want to...
No, you just have the, you should have a copy of the Dash 1 amendment. That takes care of that.
Yeah.
We will do that on Thursday. This was the warrant bill from the Treasurer's office that we will...
The doomsday bill.
Doomsday bill, which we hope we'll never need.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Hannon.
Mr. Yates, does this allow deficit spending?
It really doesn't change anything that exists right now. It simply organizes it in a way that makes it work. These statutes have been on the books for years. They would require now, essentially, everyone who goes into a bank with a warrant to have that registered by the bank, and then somehow these are going to be paid in the order in which they were registered, and nobody knows how that process would work. This changes that process, so you have an orderly process. They're ordered and registered by the Treasury itself. I know I didn't answer your question.
I know. I'm going to try to rephrase it. Does this allow deficit spending? Yes or no?
I think it allows you to create a debt in the sense that a warrant becomes a legitimate debt of the state when you have no funds. Now, in a sense, you're not spending them. Like, I don't know the answer to the question.
Al, do you want to weigh in on that?
That's Mr. Water?
Very interesting question, whether this would allow the state to...
Chair Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Officer. We will have the cash manager here, Darren Bond, on Thursday and to address that. But as Dick said, that there is no change in policy here. It's what they're doing is trying to update the statutes, and if in the event that this were to occur, I see it more as a cash management issue rather than a budgetary deficit. It's a budgetary deficit is something that has to be a mismatch between planned spending and planned revenue. So, you know, I would see it as an emergency situation that would not be comparable to a planned deficit spending.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Mr. Warner, has that question ever been posed, to the best of your knowledge, to the Attorney General or to Legislative Council? To determine, I understand this is policy, but policy aside for a moment. Let's put the policy aside. Now talk about the policy.
Okay.
Is this allow deficit spending? Because you're incurring debt without having revenue in which to pay for the debt. My question is, again, does this, in fact, allow deficit spending, regardless of the policy? I understand the policy.
Senator Hannon, I would go back to an issue of cash management versus a budgetary document that's in deficit. Cash management, it may occur for a whole variety of reasons that we may have a cash problem, and our revenue at the end of the biennium is on a cash basis. The revenue we receive and count in the general fund is strictly on a cash basis, with one exception. So, I think this is more intended to deal with that cash management issue that would expand across that timeline that separates the biennium, rather than to actually reflect on deficit spending. So, I mean, if you're looking at a cash deficit situation, we can have that at any point in time, and not constitute deficit spending.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I can, it pertains to incoming revenue rather than outgoing debt.
Senator Hann, I would say it pertains to outgoing expenditures and the timing with incoming revenue, the timing between the two.
So the question is, currently under existing policy, under existing statute, that occurs now, where you have timing of the year where people pay their quarterlies.
Yes.
And it doesn't match up on the day that the bills are due, so warrants are issued and the money is collected and paid on the following Monday or Tuesday or whatever.
Yes. Senator, again, I think the Treasury would be able to discuss with you at length their management of that, but in essence, that's what happens. And I think the area that you're referring to does raise some issues, and there is a gray area there as to when those type of flows occur at the end of the biennium, or okay, the end of the accounting period.
Okay.
And that I think is the bigger policy issue.
Because some of the bills are not actually covered on the ledger until December, even though the budget ends on June 30th.
Yeah.
They're actually not paid until maybe October, November, December.
Yes, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anything?
Close the public hearing on House Bill 2135. We will revisit this for a work session on Thursday. Committee, no meeting tomorrow. And Wednesday, we have tax credits. We've been holding off on those. If anyone has tax credits out there that they're interested in having a hearing on, please let me know. Thank you. We're adjourned.